you beautiful spirits. You are listening to WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM on your dial, and also live streaming online at WAIF883.org. WAIF, as a community radio station, serves only to open its airways to responsible, divergent points of view. The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect those of WAIF, its Board of Trustees, staff, or programmers. The opinions expressed on this program are my own views or those of my guest. I want to thank you so much for tuning in today for our weekly show called Inner Divinity, Knowing the Source Within, right here every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern. We focus here on practical tools to help you live a happier and healthier life, to help you feel better in body and mind and spirit, to actually begin living from your deepest, highest self. If you want to be in communication with that divine essence that dwells deep inside of you, well, then you're in the right place. My passion is personal growth and spiritual evolution because I've had to learn to heal just in order to keep living. And so we focus here every week on inner divinity that gives us the power to heal, on spirituality rather than religion. And I share with you some of the countless ways that we can heal ourselves, that we can begin to reclaim our own power. We are divinely created beings with God-given free will to make our own choices, to raise ourselves up, to walk ourselves into healing. We can choose to be healthier and happier through the power of that divinity that lives inside of us and all around us. And so each week we share with you ways to do just that. Often, all we need to do is actually discover and then release whatever those internal obstacles have been that have blocked our connection with that divine source of all life. That's what I call God, but you can call it whatever you like. Because what blocks us is often not conscious. It's below our level of awareness. We need a power that's bigger than ourselves to begin embracing our God-given birthright, to feel whole, to be happy, to be prosperous, to feel joyous and free in mind and body and in spirit. I hope that you and all of your friends join me here every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern to learn how you can begin living the life you've always wanted to live. My name is Reverend Louisa Dyer. I'm a metaphysical minister and holistic life coach with decades of counseling experience, and my passion has always been sharing what I've learned about healing pain, about living a happier and more peaceful life, about clearing the suffering that so many of us are doing. And it's about feeling connected with that divine power that lives inside of us and how that divine source of life itself can and does heal pain and suffering. I know firsthand how faith in that divine source of life can heal all of our woundedness. So each week on Inner Divinity, we focus on what works, what helps, what really matters. My intention always is to provide you not only with the tools, but with the inspiration to remember your wholeness, to find it, and to live it. Divine Spirit is alive in each and every one of us. I know that because without it, we wouldn't be breathing. When Spirit leaves the body dies. And until then, we have that divine spark of life and the power it holds living right inside of us. It doesn't matter where you've been, what you've done, even where you are, it only matters that you know and begin to connect with that divine source of life. Because of that inner divinity, we have the choice and the power to rise up out of depression, addiction, victimhood, or any other suffering. I know because I've done it, and I've watched countless others do it as well. And so I hope you join me here every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern, right here on 88.3 FM or online at WAIF883.org, as we explore the many ways there are to tap into the power and the beauty and the divine love that lives in your heart. It's yours as soon as you claim it. There is never really anything that we need to get or gain in order to experience wholeness or joy or prosperity. There's only stuff that we have to let go of, the stuff that has blocked our awareness of already having all of that right inside of us. That divine power is ours to use for all things good, and it arises most easily and fully from humility and gratitude. And so I want to thank you so much for listening, and to also let you know that there is a Facebook page for this show by the same name, Inner Divinity, Knowing the Source Within, and I'd love to hear from you on that Facebook page. We also begin each week with a little bit of music to uplift our spirits, to bring body and mind into a greater harmony, and to let the body move if it really wants to. Because when the body's moving with music, it begins to feel more strongly that divine spirit that is actually animating the body. So we'll be back in a few minutes, and I hope you join us for today's exploration of how to live a happier, healthier, more spiritually connected life. And here's some music to get us moving on that divine journey. Enjoy.
It's time to rise, rise. change we need.
Rise by True, T-R-U. For all of you who are just joining us, you are listening to WAIF Cincinnati, 88.3 FM on your dial, and also live streaming online at WAIF883.org. My name is Reverend Louisa Dyer. I am a spiritual life coach, and I am your host here every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern. And what we do here is focus on discovering and exploring the tools and also hopefully the inspiration to live happier and healthier and more spiritually connected lives. And so each week we talk about ways to do that. And sometimes we have people on who are telling their stories about how they woke up or what an epiphany perhaps was for them or some way that they suddenly knew that inner divinity of their own. And today I'm really excited to have on the show Mary Pierce Brosmer. And Mary is a transformative educator. She is a published poet. She's also the founder of Women Writing for a Change here in Cincinnati, which personally I think is just an amazing resource for this community. She wrote a book called Guide for Creative Transformation that was published in 2009. And today she's going to perhaps read a little bit about out of that book, but mostly what she's going to do is tell us a transformational story or two of her own, which I'm really, really looking forward to. And before we get to Mary's story, I want to give you a public service announcement because WAIF is a community-supported radio station, and we support the community in return, and we do that through public service announcements and a lot of other ways. But I want to tell you about Grailville. Grailville is owned and operated by the Grail, which is an international movement of women in 18 countries who are working for social transformation. Grailville is located in Loveland, Ohio, which is just about 20 minutes from Cincinnati. And not only do they have incredible, beautiful meeting space, but they also offer programs on ecology, spirituality, the arts, and social justice. For more information on the programs or the meeting space offered at Grailville, their number is 513-683-2340, and you can always check out their website at www.grailville.org. I also want to let you know about underwriting on WAIF. If you have a business and you would like to get your information to our listeners, we offer unbelievably cost-friendly rates. And we can target your underwriting to any show that you choose, including this one, of course. So if you're interested in that, for this show, you can get in touch with me personally through my website. You can talk to one of the underwriting experts at 513-351-1538. You can also go online to WAIF883.org, and you can get a lot of information that way as well. But we will help you reach our community of incredible listeners with your business information. So I hope that's helpful for you. And now we're going to introduce Miss Mary. And Mary, I'm so grateful and so glad that you're in the studio today.
Lovely to be with you. Thanks for inviting me.
You are most welcome. So first of all, before we get into a story, I would just love it if you said a little bit of something about Women Writing for a Change and how you managed to manifest something, because it seems like it's been there for a while.
Mm-hmm. 22 years.
22 years. Mm-hmm. And it's quite, it seems like an incredible resource in this community. Mm-hmm. So can you just say a little bit, not so much about the place, but how you actually manifested that?
Well, it seems to me it's very much in line with your, the divinity within. I would say that paying attention to what I was seeing in the world and then finding words for it myself to give some meaning and understanding to a kind of waking up. That it was obvious, but you know how you don't have eyes to see something sometimes until you get the right lens? Mm-hmm. And it was apparent to me from a really young age that women's meanings and women's stories had no particular place.
Right.
And I was an avid reader and early. And my dad, a story was that I talked and started to read at 6 months, which is, of course, an exaggeration, and didn't walk until I was three, he'd always add, because you were so not in your body. But But, you know, the literature that I read had no representations of women either, except I read biography.
Right.
And there were Louisa May Alcott and people like that that I read the stories of. But it was really clear to me that women's meanings weren't anywhere in the world in a way that honored how much they were given. And the silence of the women that I knew and no artifacts of theirs. And when my mother died, I would have given anything to have had something about that she said about herself in writing.
Right.
And my mother didn't tell stories either.
Right.
And so I know that that was the source of it. And then my vocation in life has always been some expression of being a language teacher, a writer, a reader, bringing other people into that. And so the fusion of those things evolved over my life. And then when I was in my early 40s, taking myself seriously as a poet, as in really writing poetry and performing them, attracted women to me that said, I want to do it. Will you be my teacher? And that certainly was a catalyst in and of itself. And I'd always been a teacher. And so it was an evolutionary process of finding listening within and then creating space for others to do that as well. And we do have a national presence as well. There are 7 other sister schools around the country and a lot of various ways that the work has gone into the world. So a gradual manifestation, which I believe in, rather than boom and bust.
Uh-huh. Well, it certainly feels organic.
Very much so.
When it happens that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Well, I am really grateful that I'm also an avid reader and have been forever and love to write. And it's like, to me, writing is, I don't do poetry, but just knowing it's there makes me feel better.
Right.
So I really want to say my own gratitude to you.
Thank you.
For starting that and giving it enough energy that it is now continuing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're no longer actually
I don't use the R word as in retire because I have not, but I affected my succession plan in a way that allowed younger women to continue creating.
Uh-huh.
And they bring things to it that are not available to my life. And so I wanted to make sure that that was an intentional process.
Oh, that is.
And so in 2009, I did step out, but I'm the grandmother. And as you know, you see me there. I'm on call for what is needed. And I do teach classes there when I'm asked. And my particular things, you mentioned Grailville. I still teach in our Conscious Feminine Leadership Academy, where we teach the charism of women writing for a change to other people.
Right.
And we did our work at Grailville this summer, and it was a divine place to be. They're an early proto-feminist organization from the 1940s, 1930s, and then knowing about their group through Janet Calvin, who was a writer at Women Writing for a Change. She wrote a book about the Grail movement at Women Writing for a Change over a period of several years. So there was already a kind of marriage there.
Right, a real connection.
Exactly. So it was full of grace.
That's wonderful. So what transformational story would you like to share with us today about something that's happened in your life that has helped wake you up?
But I don't seem to get these sort of exciting, like all of a sudden, you know, I'm in another world quantum leap moments. Mine are kind of incremental. So I want to read a story that I think points to that kind of slow waking up that I experience when things come together, that's from my book. This is a chapter called The Planet Passing Through Us, and I talk about a kind of radical way at looking at how writing can help us be at one with the planet instead of inscribing ourselves on the planet. But this is a story within that about going hunting with my dad.
Uh-huh.
A member of the baby boom generation, growing up working class in a small Ohio town before air conditioning, I experienced the outside world of creeks, farm ponds, and large wooded tracts as always there, open space, safe space. I was also the only daughter in a family of hunting men. Because I was the oldest of my siblings, the honorary son, until my brothers came of age, I went to the woods with my father. And he taught me to hunt for berries and mushrooms, wildflowers and greens to gather for my mother. Those early alone with dad hunting and gathering days formed a foundation of respect and love between us. I also believe them to be the DNA of my life as a practicing poet, a lifelong teacher, and now perhaps a guide along the knife's edge that we are on as a species. Dad taught me the names of things, and I loved those names. And when he was out of doors, I loved my father's ability to teach. In the woods and in the large gardens he made to help feed us, he was in his element, a patient teacher, eager to share his knowledge and skills. Outdoors, he and I were fellow creatures, not the irritable father and anxious to please daughter, confined to the smaller spaces of our indoor life together. At the age of 7 or 8, I went on my first and last gun hunt. My memory is of a trampled cornfield rimmed with trees. My memory of a trampled cornfield rimmed with trees is vivid, as is the sense of moving out of my body when our beagle Susie flushed a rabbit. Dad took aim and made a clean shot to the unfortunate creature's head. I cannot remember what happened beyond Dad putting the rabbit into the pouch of his hunting coat. Nothing was said, which was not unusual. But what was unusual was that our silence around my tear-streaked face was one in which we both felt the inevitability, and I think even the acceptability, of our differences. In the 1950s, my generation and I were moving into an era in which relatively few of us hunted and gathered our food. Forever and always, my father was a man for whom a childhood scarcity of food, coupled with his skill in bringing in rabbit or squirrel meat to the table, shaped his relationship to nature, heightening his awareness of the food chain and his place in it. In my body and in my writing, I hold the paradox of that tectonic shift away from subsistence hunting and gathering, and I resist the simplistic categories of pro and anti-gun, pro-woman and anti-male, pro-environment, anti-hunting and grazing. I resist going to war to save the planet, rushing to stereotype judgments of hunters or the poor in emerging nations. I bring these paradoxes to the creation of communities that learn to treasure what is given and attempt to learn sufficiency in an era of appalling extremes of excess and of scarcity. So is that a waking up story?
Mm. Wow. You were how old when that happened?
I think 7 or 8.
Well, I can see how that would inform the rest of your life. I can how that would make you look at and question and be present with almost everything you thought about, because that dynamic is within everything we do.
Mm-hmm. So waking up to the being so alive from that moment on, and maybe before in ways that I don't remember, to the both and of things. I eat meat.
Right.
So, and I can't bear to kill another creature.
Right. And isn't that an interesting paradox to mm-hmm. live with?
And my father was a person who went to war for our country and was a bomber pilot.
Right.
And I grew up with this simplistic story of, you know, making the world safe from fascism. And that is a true story. It's also true that, you know, that wasn't a pure effort. And there's a waking up to the connectedness of all across the spectrum of things that look like polar opposites. And I live in that.
Yeah.
Teach from that, write from that.
How do you deal with the cognitive dissonance of that?
That's a good question. Writing's been a huge tool for that, you know, making sense out of it, almost like knitting things together in a way.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I can't. You know, I'm aware that living across that kind of a spectrum, and ones that are larger even than I have capacities for, I have no doubt of that,
right.
You know, is vulnerable, makes one vulnerable. You're
yes.
not standing in truth and absolutism, and so there's a kind of shakiness that for me has manifested in sometimes lack of self-confidence, anxiety, often
right.
on depressions, that I embrace as just part of how I'm made and what I was made to see and understand for
right.
better and for worse.
Well, you know, every spiritual teacher that I've studied talks about not only the beauty, but the power that's actually in exactly where you're standing,
mm-hmm.
of not pretending like you know,
mm-hmm.
of not having a position, of being, well, this and
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
that.
Right.
And that is actually written about by a lot of spiritual teachers as one of the most powerfully spiritual places that you can stand, because you're not wedded to a positionality
mm-hmm.
and holding it so
tightly that you don't see anything else.
Mm-hmm. I keep looking for a place to stand, and I can stand. I mean, you and I talked a little bit before. I mean, you know, I have that, my brothers and I say we're proud hillbillies, as in
right.
our definition of the way we were raised was we're going to stand for some things.
Right.
And you're not going to take, you know, you're not going to hurt my people.
Right.
If I can. And I both am proud of that, but it's also in conflict with my understanding that I'm just a fellow creature, and there may be another creature in the food chain that needs what I have.
Right.
And so when I teach or give a talk or write essays, like I write in Article 25, a column about leadership, I say, this is where I'm standing in the world, and this is what I'm seeing. That's for now.
Mm-hmm.
That's always the undertone of it. And I've had editors tell me about my prose when I was working on the book, too, that sometimes it seems too provisional, and that I often will weigh down my prose, not my poetry, but my prose with a lot of, well, yeah, but, you know. And I see those, and they're not mannerisms. They come across like that, but I'm really saying there's qualified certainty.
Right.
I don't.
Right. So would you actually say that in your mind or in your feelings that you would contribute your spiritual evolution, if we want to talk about it in those terms, in part to your ability to stand in that uncertainty?
Yes. And to stand in, to imagine the truth of another person in the moment.
Right.
And that's why I make kind of a pitiful activist. Because traditional activism, as I've experienced it, and second wave feminism also, which is very, for which I'm very grateful, I find it hard to go to war with someone or something who also has a point of view and a reason for being in the world.
Right.
Without somehow standing in that person's shoes. And so I don't have a lot of absolutes that I can. So I find that my activism is a different kind than.
Right.
It's a kind of spiritual activism, if you will.
Well, you know, that's what I've called it personally for mm-hmm. years, because mm-hmm. I learned a long time ago through spiritual teachings that what you resist persists.
Yes.
To be against anything is only giving it energy.
Right.
And so I had to shift, because I was an outrageous activist, you know, when I was young. And somewhere around the early 80s, I realized, okay, this doesn't fit. This doesn't feel
mm-hmm.
right. Because I can't stand against anything, because that's not an expression of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
That's an expression of a positionality.
Right.
And to stand for something, that's how I've reclaimed my hillbilliness.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even in that little piece I read, you know, to me, going to war to save the planet. So I don't know how that works, because it just makes more war. But
right.
I can also see, and there have been people, you know, who sit in old growth sequoias so they won't cut them down. I admire that.
Right.
But then there's this other level of how do we create something new and some new consciousness for not using that up. And that's those two levels. I learned that from, I'll think of her name in a minute, but one of the eco-feminist teachers, she talked about, you know, direct confrontation has its role, creating the new and the shell of the old.
Uh-huh.
And transformation of consciousness as the three levels of change. And I'm best suited to two and three.
Right.
So that Women Writing for a Change is creating a new kind of learning container in the shell of the old systems in which I was taught and from which I learned a great deal.
Right.
You know, the very top-down. One of my favorite aspects of it was that you could never use the first person when we were.
Right.
Right? You know, the suppression of that. All of those things which I have evolved away from, but I see the value of, and then incorporated into something
mm-hmm.
without going. Although I've, you know, it's not that I'm without my anger at the higher, you know, hierarchical nature of certain aspects of my life, where there was a lot of wounding to myself and others, but also seeing the value and the limits of those people in
mm-hmm.
terms of what they did. I'm thinking of some of the teachers that I had. We all thought about that in grade school.
Right.
And you know, some of them abused power.
Right.
At the same time, they were most likely being abused themselves, and that was the only model that they knew. So, you know, I was somebody and still am somebody that in the moment of oppression or somebody oppressing someone else, I will stand, and I will stand up. And not always the, you know, most elegant thing in the room, but it's like, my favorite was a Marxist professor, this is a story years ago, when I was in graduate school in another city, just totally shaming this student. Mm. And I said, wait a minute, what's this about the people? You know, the Marxist love of the masses. This person is one of them. She's one of our classroom community here. And so that kind of misalignment is, I see that.
So you have that ability to discern justice and injustice, and you find that you have to speak up when there's injustice. See, I think that's a spiritual quality, that power, that ability to be able to discern and then know how to take action to make something different. I think the real evolution of that is when we can do that from a place of love instead mm-hmm. of a place of mm-hmm. anger.
Yeah, and that's a growing edge for me. I may even be doing it from a place of love, but my fear, the old fears of the child in the face of the patriarch are still there, so that to summon the energy, what I sound like is,
uh-huh.
I may not even be that angry, but there's a quality to my voice that I'm still trying to modulate.
Righteousness.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it takes that to be heard, but other times I would be heard a lot better if I were able to modulate it, and sometimes I have been.
Right, right.
And it's not like this happens every day either,
right.
by any means. So I'm just thinking about those kinds of things.
Right. Well, you know, in the 80s, when I was talking about before, I did a lot of research because I was a real ecological mm-hmm. activist
mm-hmm.
and realized from the research that I did that it was already too late for a physical fix. We had mm-hmm. already gone past the tipping point, and so it was too late for a physical fix. And I found myself in a position of, okay, so do I just blow my brains out? I mean, do I just give up? And because I prayed and meditated and have done that all my life, when I did, what I heard and found was that, no, you do the revolution from the inside out.
Mm-hmm.
It's evolution rather than revolution.
Right.
It's a paradigm shift, and the fix has to come from the inside out. And it sounds like that's what you're talking about.
Right.
That has been the evolution for you, mm-hmm. is walking into that place for yourself where, like with Women Writing for a Change and like with your book and your poetry, you are working with the internal. You're working with the paradigm shift
mm-hmm.
rather than being out there, being an activist against something.
Mm-hmm.
You're working for something.
And, yeah, and the spaces that I've been in that are, like, say, activist communities or groups, often the internal dynamics, the treatment of people within them is such that I find so appalling that I can't understand how that misalignment can create good in the world. And then my judge kicks in, and then I say to myself, this is also me, but this is not the evolutionary me. I have no work. This is not where my work is.
Uh-huh.
And my work is with, and you know, my language for this is creating a container that is safe enough for us to experience the discomfort of transformation and differences among us. You know,
say that again.
Well, let's see if I can. Creating the container, I say all the time, so anybody who's listening who's heard me says, oh, there she goes on that container thing. But that, of course, is a feminine idea. You know, the womb, the place that has some boundaries where we can see what's happening in this massive, you know, unparalleled planetary world that we live in and spiritual abstraction. Okay, well, how do I look at it? Well, here's this design or this container. And then that it's safe enough that we can experience the discomfort of transformation. Because when somebody's pushing at you to change, I suppose there's a change. It's change or die. But is it real? It's not transformation.
Interesting.
You know, it seems like that to me. And, you know, one of the things I love about women writing through the 22 years, some of the history that I tell in the book, is that we have had women on opposite sides of things that have divided women for years. As a classic example, women who describe themselves as pro-choice and women who describe themselves as pro-life. You know, even the language.
Right.
You know, so how... And so we don't have, there aren't arguments, there aren't verbal stories. People have brought, and I never proposed it as a topic, though I would host something like that, but only if people write what experiences in your life, what's a story mm-hmm. from your life that makes you believe the way you believe. And that's not a challenge, as in prove it to me, but
right.
let's all listen to the sources.
Right.
And mostly at the source, we're all at the same place where we want the same goodness for women, children, men, the planet. And we've had some profound examples of listening across that. And it doesn't mean, it's not about persuasion.
Right.
It's about existing in that continuum. That's...
Wow. So it sounds like not only do you use writing as a vehicle for spiritual connection and transformation, but you also use yourself as a container for other people to broaden their thinking beyond the polarity
mm-hmm.
of this or that and hold both and.
Exactly. And a simple set of tools that we've used at Women Writing for a Change for years to foster women's writing are also the creation of the container, the use of simple non-religious ritual to bring people into their own interior space before they jump at each other.
Right.
Those tools that we have used, I could look at 300 places where we, meaning myself or other women who have been traditioned in this work, have gone into spaces where there is a lot of suffering and pain and differences
right.
and convened. And if that is sustained and becomes, I call it, I even trademarked this name because I, an organizational operating system.
Aha. Uh-huh.
You know, a set of agreements about how it is that we're working together that always, in the way I teach, always includes writing.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Now, we've worked with people who are not literate as well, but there you can draw a story or remember a story. It's really about going into the interior and bringing a story out, as opposed to talking at some level of, I don't believe in this, and you're bad, and
right.
this is the, you know, that level of abstraction, and which really just makes more war.
Well, yeah, because it's just positionality mm-hmm. on top of positionality.
Mm-hmm. I just don't understand. I'm not patient enough, actually. I don't have enough patience to say in those kinds of places. So
right.
I'm amazed that people who do and seem to think that it's going to help.
Well, it's the only model they know, so
right.
they sort of feel helpless. I mean, I certainly was there until I had that awakening of, oh, this isn't going to work. I'm real into efficiency
mm-hmm.
and effectiveness.
Me too.
And when I got to the place where I realized, uh-oh, it's not going to work,
mm-hmm.
I have to do something different.
Right.
So it sounds like that for you, you knew very early when your dad was saying that you were reading and writing at 6 months and
yeah.
not walking till three, that you knew really early that language was going to be your both your avenue and your container
yeah.
for your own growth.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something in particular that you credit with bringing that forth in you, or is it just your spirit and you recognized it?
Well, I think it's the paradox of growing up in a household where there were reading was a huge value.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my parents were not formally educated, my mother to the sixth grade and my dad to the 11th. But reading and education for its own sake, not
mm-hmm.
for, like, social mobility, I credit that a lot. And just somehow I came in wired with this thing where sometimes I know things early and quickly, but then I don't know them at a level where they're very useful until I've written it.
Aha. Uh-huh. So writing for you
mm-hmm.
makes what you know concrete and manifest.
Accessible. It's a manifestation for me. And I can speak it to, I'm enough of an extrovert, like in this conversation, but I can't hold it as well in order to study and learn from it the way I can with,
uh-huh.
you know, I don't pore over my journals, but when I write something and then I can look and think, oh, well, that's, I didn't know I knew that. That could be useful the next time, say, I am trying to explain something to one of my grandsons that's kind of been beyond me before.
Uh-huh.
Maybe this is language that I could use. So, could I read you this little tiny thing?
Sure, absolutely.
Saad Goshen, who's a wonderful local treasure, did a series on artist activists in Street Vibes. And he's having a show of the photos and the poetry and visual art of that that's going to be opening September the 26th at Northern Kentucky. Well, I'm part of that, and he asked me to write an artist statement. And I've written those before because I've been in other shows, but I noticed how different this one is since the last time I did it. Here's what I said. I used my favorite quote from Gregory Bateson. The pattern that connects is the pattern that corrects.
Nice.
I love that. And my book is actually, a lot of it is based around that archetypal patterning. And I wrote, in my life and work, I am preoccupied to the point of obsession with creating patterns which connect and therefore heal. I am the opposite of a nihilist. I am an everythingist. An artist of the question, what is missing and how can we include it for the sake of the whole?
Wow.
In particular, I have eyes to see, a voice to say, and hands to weave the missing feminine into culture. Never against, always for, is my holy grail of art and of activism. So I just wrote that yesterday. That's why I thought, I think I'll bring that to the show because I think this is what...
Yeah.
This is what I know as of yesterday about how to say this deep feeling I have that I'm physical body of something that I call spirit. I could say God.
Right.
Higher power. I don't want to get stuck in the language, but there is something that is, that I am, that has a particular purpose.
Yeah.
An evolutionary purpose, and then I'm done.
That's beautiful.
And I'm good.
Well, you know, physics... I'm just thrilled to live in these times because physics has proven what mystics and sages have known forever, is that there's one energy in the universe that's part of all of us, and we're all part of it, and it is self-regulating, and it is in harmony with itself, and you can call that love, or you can call that life, or you can call that God, or you can call it whatever you want to, but it is that source energy, and the way I know it's in everyone is because I've worked with a lot of people who were in a dying process, and when that spirit leaves the body's dead, and it's obvious. Mm-hmm. And until that spirit leaves the body, it's obvious that body is not dead. So there's something there that isn't there that we call dead. But until that point, it's there.
It's so evidentiary, as in you can see it. And I think, you know, getting stuck in the language, if I had to choose from among those nouns that you used, I would choose love because I'm so emotional. I know things emotionally and instinctively first. And so I would go there, but it's so that all, I don't want to go into a war with anybody about what we call it.
Right, me either. That's why I use a lot of different words for it all the time. Well, it sounds like writing has really given you a way to access that, what you know, and not only to make it manifest in the world, but really to know it in your own self.
And then, for me, I can't separate out the fact that once I have something or I am something, I want to share it.
Right.
And that's another aspect of my upbringing. I mean, there was nothing that we had in our garden that somebody didn't have access to. That's just how my parents were.
Right.
And so the natural thing for me is like, wow, this is so cool. I want to share this.
Right.
And that's the teacher part.
Right.
And then at Women Writing for a Change, one of our strategies is a read-around where it's the most powerful moment, I think, in some ways, where people do not perform. We're not a performer. I mean, we have performed, but it's not about performing. It's about listening to Around the Circle, to all these variations on a theme. And then that's a moment of transformation where you can see the multiple ways that people have access this thing that we're all made of. And there's no general, unless somebody gets didactic, which very rarely happens, and preachy, there's no real thing to go to war with. It's like, oh, well, I don't feel that, and I don't believe that. It's not been my experience, but wow.
Right.
That expands my understanding of why somebody else would. So what's not to like? You know.
Well, and isn't that the quintessential spiritual understanding, is that everything is life, love, God. Everything is source. So it might look like this, it might look like that, and I might not have never thought of one or the other of those, but somehow mm-hmm. it all makes the whole, and so it's all part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like you've used writing to not only give it to yourself, but give it to a lot of other people to facilitate that understanding that there are lots of pieces to the whole and none of them are wrong
mm-hmm.
just because you've never heard of one.
Right, just because you've never heard of one. And then, you know, I said to you earlier before we came on air, I hit lots of places where I believe in the existence of evil. I don't know how to explain it, and I don't, but there are actions and ways of being in the world that are wrong, as in this container of time, you have no right to do this.
Right.
And you don't get to hurt somebody else or whatever. In a very much, much larger container, there may be an evolutionary purpose for all that.
Right.
But, you know, like I have to, in my life, I exist in that kind
right.
of space to not weigh so far out in the ozone that, and that's one of, has been my struggles with a lot of evolutionary big picture teachers, is that often then, I don't know why it happens, but the ideas are brilliant, but then when you see them in action, the interaction on the human plane is not so pretty.
You know, I think Byron Katie addresses that really well, because Byron Katie is a teacher, supposedly an enlightened being, and she is. I've been with her. She just oozes love. And her purpose in life is to eliminate suffering. And what she teaches is everything's in perfect order. It's all good. Everything is loving what is. That's literally mm-hmm. the title of her book. And people have asked her that. Well, if you're loving what is, then how can you be thinking that something is suffering and therefore you're going to change it?
Right.
She says, I'm loving what is, and I'm loving the fact that I can see suffering, and I'm loving the fact that I feel called to do something about it. And that's my life's mission, is to eliminate suffering. I'm not saying suffering is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying suffering is bad. I'm saying it's my life mission to eliminate it.
Mm-hmm.
So she's kind of in that both and
yes.
place. You might enjoy reading
mm-hmm.
some of that, because I think she handled that. Well, if everything is good, then how can you be for anything?
Right.
And I think she really addresses that well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are out of time here. It goes so fast.
This is lovely.
And I just want to thank you so much. I really enjoy this. I would, you make me want to go and have more conversation and interaction. So are there any last words, anything you'd like to really say before we do a couple of more announcements here?
Well, since I'm the grandmother, it wouldn't be self-promotional to put in a plug for Women Writing for a Change, would it?
No.
It's the women that are there now working really hard to create the new generation. And wonderful. We have girls starting with 9-year-olds that we work with. And so womenwriting.org is our website. And there's a lot that's going on that I think people would really enjoy. The fall semester is starting soon. So
that's wonderful. And let's hear the name of your book one more time.
My book, the title is Women Writing for a Change, but the subtitle is A Guide for Creative Transformation, and you can download it from Amazon. It's published by Notre Dame University.
Wonderful.
And
so is it like a workbook?
Buy it at Women Writing for a Change. There are exercises after every chapter.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And there's how to use writing in the workplace, how to use it. One of my favorite things that I've never done, there's a section where I talk about going to desecrated places and convening a writing circle to resacralize.
Oh, wow.
For example, so there's a lot about the planet passing through
wonderful.
Us and that long vision of it. So
wonderful. Well, yes, thank you
thank
again
you.
So much. I want to thank everybody so much for tuning in today. I've really enjoyed talking with Mary and hearing a little bit about her story, and I'm very interested in reading her book, actually. And we are going to close out with our theme song, of course, which is God Is, by Faith Rivera, and I hope you listen to how Faith tells you how that source, that life energy, that love that Mary and I have been talking about is showing up. It's showing up everywhere that you are. And I think if you hear this, it might help you feel more free about being exactly who you are instead of pretending to be someone else. Enjoy, and I will see you back here next week.